to strangers. Well, our children, past the color of your skin, and all of our sin and all of our wrongs. Yes, they are. You better rise up to the power. This ain't no time for cowards. When the clock starts a wishing hour, Lord, this ain't no time for cowards.
Welcome back to Death to False Country after a several year long sabbatical. That right there was Jesse Dayton in Charlottesville. And it kicked the whole thing off with Fifth on the Floor and Burn Nashville Down. So anyhow, long time no talk to. I won't even tell you where I've been. Because I have a special comeback special episode guest, St. Christopher Webster. You may know him as St. Christopher or St. Christopher Webster. Or you may recall him from the motherfucking Saints from the great state of Nebraska. I spent several years tearing up America's asphalt, fronting that rock and roll nightmare. Anyhow, I have a feeling you're going to be hearing a lot from Chris here in the coming weeks and months. In fact, I know you will be, because I'm about to broadcast the first half an hour of an over hour-long interview we did. A lot of bullshit and catching up. Had some audio problems. So, I cut it down. But you'll also hear from his wife, Casey. He's got a new musical project going on with her as well. And after that, I'll play a couple St. Christopher Webster tracks. All right, let me take a drink of my Irish Mule.
Oh, hey! Sitting here, I got some fucking unfiltered cider and some Tullamore Dew right now, so.
Keeps the COVID away.
I splurged on the Tullamore Dew for this, Felix, just so you know. I was like, you know what? Seriously, it was just kind of like when I talked to Ralph. I'm like, I'm be drinking with my fucking buddy who I haven't talked to in a long time, and we're having some fun doing some fucking, I feel to be cool shit. So I'm like, fuck it. I'm gonna spend the extra few dollars, damn it.
You have to when you get older.
Yes, right. Ain't that the truth? These kids drinking fucking cheap whiskey. I'm like, are you fucking serious?
Yeah, I can't do Old Crow anymore.
No, it's hard. Now, granted, I was drinking it last week for a buddy who died. As his thing was Old Crow, so we did drink some fucking Old Crow last week, but
oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad stuck with Black Velvet.
Oh Jesus.
Yeah.
BV, baby.
I don't know about that, man. I don't know. Those old guys, all these West Coast cowboy guys like their Canadian whiskey. It's really bizarre.
I do like, you know, and I do like Crown Royal, all right. I like Pendleton.
Oh heck yeah!
But yeah. How do we do this? How do we start now, or what the fuck do we do?
Oh yeah. We just go.
I'm just wondering what the fuck to do. I don't know how to do this shit.
You just talk.
Oh yeah. Oh, gets both in trouble.
Exactly. That's the whole point.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody has to. Fucking live like it's still America.
Right.
So you're an essential worker, right?
Yes. Right now I'm an essential. It's so fucking bizarre.
It's ironic.
Yes. It is, and to do what I'm doing, to work in a liquor store / gas station. But like I was talking to Kevin Sharp. He's got a podcast called 15 Beers on Tuesday afternoon, which is fucking hilarious. He's out of Kingston, New York. And the
I gotta check that out. That's a great song.
Yeah, damn right. Yes, yeah. You'd like you would fucking I'm surprised. Kevin, he plays in an act called Red Necromancer. And
fucking genius.
Yeah, and he's a really good dude. I mean, he's band guy from long time, long time service industry guy. So like, you know, he's been feeling the strain and stuff. We talked a lot about that, you know, on that show about how, yeah, of all the fucking jobs I've worked, you know, working this one is essential, because where I'm at, I'm in the fucking, we're in a very low income area of Grand Rapids here. And that's a lot of people's food source, because people don't realize, okay, they shut the fucking buses off. Nobody can afford Ubers. Nobody can afford taxis. So that's their walking distance to the food source. Now, granted, it's fucking canned food, gas station type shit, but that's fucking better than nothing, you know? And for, you know, our homeless friends and our people that are, you know, heavy drinkers and shit, I don't care what anybody says. If you are a heavy drinker, you know how it is. You need your fucking booze. I mean, some of these guys, if they don't, they're going to fucking die. So I never thought working a goddamn part-time job off the road just for a job to do would, and not just that, but it was so enlightening to me to be where I was at, because I'm in the shadow of Spectrum Health, which is fucking Queen Betsy DeVos. The DeVos family owns that. They literally call it Medical Mile. It's this huge fucking medical. I will give them this. I've had to be hospitalized in there. It's actually a really fucking good hospital. Obviously, you know, that family and that woman is a fucking horrendous greed, you know. And a horrible fucking human being, Department of Education, even though she's a fucking dumb as a fucking box of shit.
She's a Sith Lord.
Yeah, and that's something. But anyway, all these nurses and doctors and support medical staff coming in there when this was all going down initially was a big eye-opening thing for myself, because I don't know fucking about this. What the fuck do I know about this? But the bonds I've built with these people over the last couple of years, you know, they started really making things clear how serious this was and how fucked up the route was being taken. And obviously, you know, with everything going on between the Trump-Whitmore saga, I mean, this state's been a hotbed. We were talking about this when I called you, you know, last week, how it's put me in a position where I'm at right now to see things in this crisis as sort of a ground zero level. So,
yeah. Like, so Michiganders don't want to wear the masks.
Well, Not all of us. Like, the thing is, yeah, they don't want to, like I was telling you earlier, or telling you last week, the thing about Michigan, and this is, again, coming from a guy who fucking, I've only lived here since 2016. I've only lived in Grand Rapids since 2017. There is a long, crazy history here of a lot of different tensions and shit. And you have, you know, obviously, because, you know, you look at the way that the auto industry was and everything else, you had a lot of Southerners coming up to work in the industry. And, you had Detroit, obviously they had race riots, you know, back then, where they actually fucking literally like caged off the inner fucking park there and just made a prison in the middle of that in the 60s. So you had like a horrible fucking racial tension between the black and white up here. And you have a Southern culture brought up in here, and you have the slave culture brought up here from years ago, obviously. So you have there is a definite tension up here that people would not guess. The other thing about Michigan, too, is I've explained to these folks up here, and not sounding condescending, but, you know, where you grow up is sort of the center of the universe, you know what I'm saying? I know. You know what I mean? And, like, to me, still to this day, I think geographically of where things relate to Lincoln, Nebraska, where I'm from, you know? I still kind of think on that level, but the thing that Michigan people don't realize is you have to come up into Michigan. It is a isolated fucking state. And with that, it is sort of a world of its own. And there's definitely not so much like a Montana, but there definitely is that sort of isolationist culture. There definitely is this huge fucking survivalist like paramilitary culture here. So with that, and then you have a governor that will, you know, is by all intents do the best to protect their citizens, I guess. I don't know. It's created a fucking pressure cooker, man. It's been something to see.
Do you think Michigan's going to go for Trump again?
That is an interesting question. I have not even pondered. That's a good question. I mean, it's so fucking divided up here, man. It really is politically. And all my friends, everybody I work with, we're all, you know, the majority of people that I'm up here around are non-white and poor. So, you know, like myself being a fucking, you know, poor fucking country boy, I fit right in with that, with their,
right.
You have, you know, but then you also have the fucking fuckers live out in the sticks who are equally as poor, but they definitely, there's, you know, the I don't even know how to fucking put it. There definitely is that, there is a definite, lack of better words, a white supremacist type fucking climate up here that is really bizarre. There's definitely a real fucking hardcore redneck thing. There is definitely folks that are as poor as I am, but by God, they'll fucking take a bullet in the head for Trump.
Right.
I could definitely see it happening. I don't know, but if it happened, would I be surprised? No, even though you've got this fucking, you know, the auto industry and the unions still around and all that, still there is a definite support for this fucking jerk off. I don't know. I can't explain it. I don't know why, but you know, like those are just some elements in which I see as an outsider, which I think a lot of times, like I'm on the outside looking in, I'll tell these people the way I'm seeing things and the way that I perceive this state and this city and everything else as much different than the way they do. You know what I mean? Because I see it from an outsider's perspective.
Well, Michigan too, like you said, like it's isolated. But as far as states go, too, Michigan's kind of like a latchkey kid, man. The government just, as soon as fucking General Motors moved out of there, they didn't give a fuck what happened to Michigan.
Well, and that's
poison water and the everything.
Right. Right. They keep talking about that. These fucking jerkwads running up on the Lansing Capitol, which when I first moved here, I lived, you know, a couple miles, if that, down from that in Lansing. These fuckers marching up there and then blocking the road to the other hospital down there, you know, getting in the way. So if there's fucking ambulances, people having heart attacks, they couldn't have got through, running around with their fucking guns and whatnot, and their rebel flags and their fucking swastikas and also their horse shit. You have that going on because, you know, they're saying, you know, we need to keep this lockdown going to keep people away from each other. However, Flint, how many years has not had clean fucking water? You know, a whole city blighted and destroyed from that. And not just Flint, you know, Saginaw, right outside of Flint, which we've played many times, and my buddy Zach, who plays occasionally in this act, a very dear fucking friend of mine, he lives up near there. And that has become, a couple of years ago, was number one murder capital in the state. It is a small fucking town, but all that blight and all that fucking poverty that happened when the auto industries went down just spilled over into this. So I have no fucking idea why they would ever side with some fucker that's a fucking, you know, billionaire piece of garbage. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. That's shit I can't – that's beyond my realm.
It's really no different than, I mean, like even where I grew up, which was agricultural and rural, you know, and you have guys like Reagan and Bush that were no friend of the farmers, no friend of the rancher.
Yeah.
But, you know, unequivocal support because they're waving a fucking flag.
Well, totally. And you know, you put it like that, you know, here's the flip side. Here I am, grew up in fucking Nebraska, rural Nebraska. You know, much of it, they didn't realize how poor they were. I certainly realized how poor we fucking were. I grew up in the fucking rural areas and stuff. And you can't find much of a fucking more beat red state than that. So, I mean, a lot of that I think is social conservative shit. Obviously, the religious shit. the abortion shit, all that fucking nonsense obviously bleeds into there. I mean, a lot of it too, where I grew up at, you know, I'm as far as I know, you know, Irish, German, Swedish, you know, Lutheran, Methodist, Catholic, very fucking white, very fucking conservative. And so that obviously influences all of it, which makes no fucking sense, because on a, you know, a sociological level and on an economic level, and on these fuckers don't, not only do they not care about you, they want to exploit you as much as they can, you know? And it's never made sense to me.
No, they refer to us as human stock.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm like, fuck. I'm like, my grandfather was a rancher. I know what stock means, motherfucker. You know?
Yeah, no kidding, man. No kidding. So yeah, I mean, it's been very interesting up here watching. It's been a weird thing for me, like artistically and view, you know, fucking social viewpoint wise and political wise, whatever the fuck you want to say, like where I've always been, and then landing here during this time. I think not to sound crass, but it's actually helped us get our music out there more, because I have all these people hitting me up and seeing the shit that I'm saying and going through now, going, oh yeah, you were talking about this shit 20 fucking years ago, you know, and being where I'm at and seeing it happen and being a former advocate and outreach worker and shit, it's like, fuck, this is everything that we fought against. This is everything that we tried to work for and work for again, and fucking, it's all crumbling into a fucking pit, you know, right in front of me.
And that's 10 years since you did Country Blues too.
Yep.
So if you just look at the last decade.
Yeah. Yeah. That's on a music level. Like I said, it's interesting. Until you said that to me, I fucking did not occur to me that was 10 years ago. And that album, you know, that had been one I've been writing for a long time. But like I said, you know, the act had been around, 2008, 9, 10. We're going on 12, 13 years. 2000, my birthday is February 13th, 2021. And that will be officially the, you know, 13th year of this act. So we were, you know, I was doing it a couple, 3 years before that. You know, the band had been around for 10 years. And this was the 10th year anniversary of that. And during that time, I had written a fucking grant under the Obama administration helping homeless youth within the education system. I would fucking dare you to try to do that now under this shit. It would never happen. I don't know how that shit's even functioning. Not functioning right now, because they're fucking everybody's quarantined. But I mean, it was so fucking different back then, man.
Everything. I mean, like politically, socially, musically, because like that was almost right before we hit the sweet spot in like the whole underground roots music thing, you know, where you had people who were there for the right reasons and not just to like take selfies at Sturgill Simpson concerts.
Yeah, that's, you know, you look at that, and that was, you know, that was pre Muddy Roots. That was pre fucking Farmageddon Records. That was all that, you know, I was doing that shit. We were doing that shit long before that. It wasn't for the fashion show. It was because that's who we were, you know? And it's funny too, because an album like Country and Blues, because of the name, people assume it's country and blues. Well, but punk rock is country, you know? I mean, it's not, is it pure country and blues? Absolutely not. You know, nothing we ever do, I feel like, is that. It's just heavily influenced by that writing and that attitude. Just like, you know, I get referred to, people battle about what's punk rock. I'm like, well, you having this argument shows you're not a fucking punk rock. You know, it's kind of an intangible thing. It's just sort of an attitude and whatnot. And you know what I think? I mean, the whole roots thing, like I said, I've never tried to be negative about it. I think a lot of fucking cool things came out. I wouldn't be talking to you right now. Yeah, if it weren't not for that years ago. But to me, I think it kind of reached its zenith in 2006, and when Straight to Hell came out, and then fucking from there, it's been a slow decline downward. Now, granted, there's been some fucking beautiful moments and some awesome shows and some awesome festivals and some great things have come out of that. But to me, it was never meant to be a a stagnant thing. Nothing is. And just like what punk rock and hardcore was, that's what that became and has become. To me, that fucking scene is long dead. And I never wanted to be a part of it. I didn't want to be a part of a fucking scene. I have a lot of friends who play in that. And I've played some cool fests there and everything else, but that was not who I was or never was that. You know what I mean? That was, you know, and then just like when we were as a kid and we didn't fit in the fucking metal scene. Well, we weren't a metal band, you know, and definitely did not have the snobby heavy metal band attitude. So
I think that was kind of the magical, I say moment. It was probably like 2 or 3 years, but it was like people were redefining what country music meant. I think it was a lot of people who grew up in rural areas, but didn't necessarily like listen to Garth Brooks. You know, we're listening to fucking Black Flag.
For sure.
But the country, you know how country music is, or blues music, or any like bluegrass or folk or whatever you're exposed to regionally, it gets into your blood. And it's just like under the surface the whole time. You're not even aware of it until you hit a certain age. And then you're like, fuck, man, if I just take the distortion off.
That's the fuck. There's no, like, you know, you look at, there's so many arguments that I believe are 100% right, that the first, you know, rock and roll star was Hank Williams Sr. I mean, I think that rock and roll is fucking, I think that, when it comes to the fucking all end all be all, it's going to be Hank Sr. for me. When it comes to the first rock and roll star, I think Little Richard is fucking rock and roll. Like when it comes to like the nuances of what rock and roll, what a rock, a fucking crazy flamboyant fucking gay man from Georgia who rocks harder than everybody ever thought of. There's that. But like when it comes to like the holy grail to all of us is probably Hank Sr. And if it's not, I don't know what the fuck you're listening to or who you are. You know, it's just, I mean, like I said, to me, I had old school country. I grew up despising country because I grew up in that, you know, 90s era of fucking the commercial Garth Brooks type shit. And it wasn't until I was like 19 and I heard Hank Sr. and it started clicking with me. And then after I was 21 and, you know, you've been fucking fucked up enough in your life and been through enough shit at that point, you go, oh, okay. Now I'm starting to get this.
If you think about it too, I mean, like, it doesn't get much more punk rock, like on any level, than Woody Guthrie. And I don't even know that the guy ever plugged into
it. Oh, yeah. Fuck yes. I mean, like, well, that like when he hopped trains to go and go fucking play and support union rallies. And that's how the message was spread through his music. That's why he was doing what he did. That's why he was living the life he was. You know, that's why he did that. And this fucking, you know, it's long tread territory for me, and I'm not going to get into it, but this costume-wearing fucking train hopper shit is absolutely fucking absurd to me. It's similar. It bleeds into this whole outrage fucking call-out culture bullshit that you're a bunch of suburban white kids who want something to grasp onto and want some kind of a cause, but at the end of the day, you don't know the fuck you're talking about, and you're in it for the wrong reasons, and you represent something that is fucking comically absurd. You're a parody of yourself is what you are, kids. You know,
I just watched this thing on Japan, and they have like a Latino culture over there, not actual Latinos, but it's these Japanese people like adapting kind of the Southern California Latino thing with all the way down to low riders and like shrines. And as absurd as that looks to us from here, or it would definitely look to a Latino person, it's Japan, you know, it's like kitsch culture. They're just like in a
vacuum.
It's the same thing here. I'm like,
That is actually the most brilliant analogy I've ever heard of this, honestly, what you just said, because that is, it's a mirror of what people think it is or what it should be. And it's the most, it's comical, you know, and nothing against those folks in Japan, God bless them. They, you know, they think, but around the fuckers I'm around who then, you know, and then it's funny. Then then all of a sudden these are the ones who were coming to your shows and fucking, or coming around these shows. And then all of a sudden, a couple, three, four, five, 6 years later, they're the ones like headlining some of these fests. It's like, dude, this is a fucking joke. Sorry, but you, this is what you got to offer, you know, just because these fuckers put a few hobo tattoos on their fucking knuckles or face or whatever and fucking strum a mandolin really hard. Fuck off. Lick my balls. No. Denied. I just basically, man, it's just, I don't like phoniness.
I didn't know you've got something going on with your wife. You guys really?
Yes. This is super fucking exciting to me. And see, this is very interesting because now it's so funny because I have these fucking the crew that we're talking about. Now that there's been like a shift more over the years toward hardcore, and then for some reason sludge came. They're like, oh, sludge is around. Like, sludge has been around in my life for many years. I listened to a band called Black Sabbath. You know, like, fuck it. This is not fucking new, kids. But like that kind of shit. And then the now noisy punk rock, I've had these bands, you know, I've watched them now start to plug in amps and stuff. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm like, you're kind of doing this in fucking reverse, actually. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
because I'm like a lot of us old fuckers, you know, we play really hard and really fast for a long time. And you just want to do something different, or you physically fucking can't play as fast as you used to. I mean, my fucking hand, I've had my spine surgeries and my goddamn the carpal tunnel surgery. There's no fucking way I could play old motherfucking Saint stuff like I used to. There's certain songs I cannot play, you know. But beyond that, with that, you know, you want to write some different stuff. And with me and her, with me and Casey, there's a project. And this is so different and so unique, for me at least, because what we're doing is I've never tried to write differently than what I write. You dig what I'm saying? Because I've always been like, here's the visceral response, here's what I'm thinking, whatever. Well, this is actually kind of sitting, and what we're trying to do is write these kind of dark Americana, and I wouldn't say folksy, I wouldn't say country, just dark, you know, old American music, and it's just coming out very dark, and it's probably going to stay that way. But it's largely written. She's the main vocalist, and I'm incorporating her so much in the writing because we are writing it, trying to like write it from a female perspective. A lot of period pieces. There's one song that I'm really proud of that's going to come out called Virginia. And that's my grandma's name, Virginia Dornbach. And it's written from her perspective, like when my grandpa came back from the war, he was the war hero. But as I got older, I realized she was the hero. She held him together. She made him the hero for us boys, you know. And you know, she stood by him and made him the man of fucking that he was. But she was the strong one. There's a song like that. There's a song. Oh, fuck. We got a lot of cool. I'm super excited about this project. And what I'm really excited about, too, is there's no limits to it. There's a kid named Sean Neely who plays around here. He's a hell of a stand-up bass player. So it is that what we've seen over the years, the root stuff. But this is siphoned through me and siphoned through a very different perspective of writing, a very different perspective of playing, somebody who's actually played fucking hard music for over 20 years and trying to make something. I said it's more – It's so much more melodic, and it's, I dare say, fucking beautiful, you know? And especially with her singing. People love her singing. If you go to the – hey, babes. Are you talking about me? We are talking about you right now. This is my buddy Felix right here. This is Casey.
Hello, Felix.
Howdy.
So you and your wife are working on something? And I just told him I was trying to say it. I go, old American music – written from a female perspective. She keeps saying, you tell him what you think. She said, you tell him the...
So I sort of want every song to come across as a period piece. So every song is going to evoke the 1760s of, you know, two women in love going against the church and going, you know, crossing barriers of hierarchy or... women in the 1940s who are taking care of their loved ones as they come home from war, or the desolation that a woman feels trying to provide for her family in the era of the Great Depression, or in the middle of Midwest America during a sandstorm where everything all your cattle's killed off and your family, you know, the crops don't grow anymore. And so it's all told from a woman's perspective, be it good or bad. And because I don't want it to just highlight all the good that women do. It's also about, you know, how we are, we can be darker creatures and we do give in to, you know, the temptations that that everyone does.
Whores.
Okay.
If you're doing that, are you just thinking back over like eras of history or historical events? Are you like researching things?
Both. It's a historical fiction.
And for me, like for instance, the song Virginia is literally really fucking honest, and is a song that I'd been trying to write since I was 19. I'm 39 now. It kind of is a tribute to my grandpa, but it just changed, you know, as you get older and you see things how they are. And it just, you know, she is definitely the hero of that story. That is a definite nonfiction, real fucking, you know, bluntly real thing, you know. Like during the quarantine, you can tell them about the Save the Bourbon song we wrote. I mean, tell them your idea behind that.
So we just started piecing together a new song. It's called Save the Bourbon. And that happened. So we're in the middle of this quarantine and we're walking around and realize that there are no liquor stores open. There's no one on the streets.
No bars open.
Everything shut down. No bars are open. And we happen to have a little bourbon at the house. And we were walking along and I said, well, why don't we save the bourbon till the sun goes down? And
I like it. Well, now mind you, Felix, there's a little bit more to that. We had this weird sweet vodka shit she bought. We were
terrible vodka that we could drink now, but then yeah, save the bourbon till the sun goes down. And that invoked an imagery in my head of let's put it back into Prohibition era, where there's a couple and they're literally staring longingly out the windows at empty streets, and there's no one around, and everywhere is closed, and they have no money to their name. And they've come to realize that the only thing that's holding them together as a couple is drinking together. And so they're sitting and waiting and watching the clock till the sun goes down so they can actually become a couple again, so they can get drunk.
So they can tolerate each other.
Exactly. And
that's a real story. You look at the old school fucker.
Yeah, have you been reading my mail?
And so I want that one to evoke the imagery of two people just waiting idly until they can drink together so they can pretend to be in love again. Yeah. And so that they can live the life that they tell themselves that they have, even if they've got empty wallets and no friends and nothing going on, they can at least lie to each other for a little while after they've had a few shots of bourbon and had a few cocktails. And it's not just the clock ticking by. They can actually conversate and they can, you know,
well,
just
see, like,
pretend.
With that, like I said, that's where this comes in. Like I said, I'm really trying to lay back. If I have any skill, it's definitely not a guitar player, is definitely not a singer. To me, it's a songwriter, and trying to add that to format and help when, like, Casey will come up with an idea or a concept and we do it together. And the one thing that's important to me is something like that. Just like you said, you're writing from that perspective. Well, here's Felix going, fuck, man, that rings true to me. So taking these old ideas and themes, but making them relevant to us fucking reprobates who are going to listen to it. And I know it's going to work. It's working already because the shit we've played for people, they're really, really stoked about it. And it's so different for me. And I'm so excited to do something so fucking different, you know?
We want it to be about all those little tragedies that people experience in life, just told in a different manner. Just the little bits and pieces that everyone can relate to. Even if it's just stories that you've heard in the past, but it still rings true to some extent. It's about forbidden love. It's about loss. It's about having to be strong and be the rock and the anchor in a relationship. It's about watching family members die. It's about living lives that you don't want to live. It's about living lives that you want to live that go against society.
tears in my eyes, and the rain, the gray Midwestern skies. Empty prayers and empty hopes, Lord, I love the dead end road. Oh, once you enter here, you can abandon hope. Well, now I'm drinking on borrowed money, and I'm living on borrowed time. It ain't every day that you watch your mother die. Lord, there better be a heaven. She's prayed to it her whole life. Well, I hope you're real there, Jesus Christ. When I've been mourning on this long before death, long before she took her last breath. When I've been driving for days, and the question still remains, how have we came to this? Well, now I'm drinking on borrowed money, and I'm living on borrowed time. It ain't every day that you watch your mother die. Lord, there better be a heaven. She's prayed to it her whole life. Well, I hope you're real there. Just trying to understand, oh, where this will end and where it all began. You can wish away your whole life, and you can hope until the end of time, but all we're doing is waiting around to die. Well, now I'm drinking on borrowed money, and I'm living on borrowed time. It ain't every day that you watch your mother die. Oh, there better be a heaven. She prayed to it her whole life. I hope you're real there, Jesus Christ.
Motherfucker! Revolution! Motherfucker!